Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning we're hitting the road and heading to Granby to visit a very special program working to heal and help veterans. Foxfield Farm was established to provide an equestrian groundwork training program for veterans, working in partnership with the Quinnipiac University Center for Veterans Rehabilitation, St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center, as well as Mount Sinai Rehabilitation Hospital, to develop and study the impact of these interventions on veterans suffering from PTSD and related mental health issues. Then we're going to check in with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, who's just wrapping up his second walk across Connecticut in an effort to solicit input from his constituents face-to-face along the highways and byways of our state. We'll hear about the concerns Senator Murphy was hearing from and find out what he's going to do about addressing them. Then we're going to wrap up with a very special Connecticut grassroots nonprofit called DAN, the Dignity and Advocacy Network. DAN's mission is supporting communities through education and training on positive non-medical approaches to mental health care. We're going to meet the organization's founder, who speaks internationally on the value of social and psychological approaches to serious mental health conditions. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. The Newtown Yoga Festival, now in its fifth year, has partnered with the Aviel Foundation, a local Newtown, Connecticut nonprofit started by the parents of Aviel Richmond, who was one of the 20 first graders killed in the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings. The Aviel Foundation works to prevent violence and build compassion through brain science research, community engagement, and education. They're going to be holding their event on Saturday, August 26th. That's coming right up next Saturday from 9 to 4 at NYA Sports and Fitness in the Fairfield Hills campus in Newtown. If you'd like to get details and sign up, visit NewtownYogaFestival.org.
All right. Well, when we say we go to the field, we really go to the field. Sometimes we go to the farm, and sometimes when we go to the farm, farm isn't what you exactly think of. Right now we're at Foxfield Farm, but farm stands for a recovery mission. This is an IRS registered 501c3 nonprofit where we are here today as a guest of the Reagan team. Bill and Susan Patritelli Reagan founded this location and has established it to provide an equine groundwork PTSD therapy curriculum for U.S. veterans. Inclusive in the effort is a program that takes in rescued and retired horses to be rehabilitated and rehomed for a safe and productive new life. We're here in their relatively new barn and enjoying all their hospitality, but they also are dog breeders and do all kinds of interesting things. Probably won't have time to talk about all of it this morning, but we can talk about the mission. But first of all, I'm interested, Bill, Susan, how did you guys meet? How did the Reagan team get together?
Well, actually, John, it's a pleasure to have you here, and it's a pleasure to talk about it. This initiated approximately, it was a little over a year ago. I had the opportunity to actually speak with Sean Connolly, who was the Commissioner for Veterans Affairs in Connecticut.
Good friend of ours on the show.
And he and I had a very interesting interview. And then after that interview, I had had in my mind that I wanted to do something for the veterans. Having had a long career in business life and in corporate life, however, avocation has always been horses, and particularly in polo and fox hunting and showing and training. And I wanted to start an equine therapy program, which he was familiar with that type of therapy, said it was a very good idea, it had been very successful in other parts of the country, and it would be terrific to have one here in Connecticut. And we would focus on veterans specifically with PTSD. Having said that, we then proceeded on. My husband and I said we need to make it a 501c3 to make it credible, to be able to have the opportunity with donations to have them be tax deductible. And so, therefore, we did proceed ahead with that. And then it turned out that I am an ambassador for St. Francis Hospital, and I had heard that they were now concentrating on PTSD and particularly veterans. And they said, let's partner on this program. So it would be St. Francis, Mount Sinai, and Quinnipiac University. And Quinnipiac was actually the first one to give us a grant. So we moved on from there, and we also partnered with the first company, Governor's Horse Guard, so that ours is a groundwork therapy program, And then if they would like to move on to riding and or joining the 1st Company Governor's Horse Guard, they could do that because they are both military units. So the synergy between the horses and the veterans is established because we also rescue or take in retired polo horses. And, John, we use polo horses because they are used to a lot of activity and they do not spook easily. And that opportunity for veterans to have a purpose in doing this program is very therapeutic for them, and in turn, the horses are giving back to the veterans. So I'll let my husband kind of pick up from
How about you, Bill?
He does the heavy work.
Were you along
here
for the ride, basically? It was just like she said go and you said which way?
I was very supportive of, you know, what she wanted to do. She'd been very passionate about this for a long time. And once we got the program started and we got the first part of the indoor arena built, it really helped to develop the program. And I think where we differ from a lot of other therapy programs is that we try to give the veterans a purpose rather than having them being clinical specimens. We give them a purpose. We give them a skill. We teach them all about management, about horses. We have a farrier come in who's on our board of directors, a veterinarian who's on our board of directors will come in, talk about the horse, how the horse works, how they're all put together, what their philosophy is. And so we will give them a skill that they can actually go out and go and find a job working at a barn, because they'll be able to handle them, be able to trailer load them, know about feeding, know when somebody's sick, somebody's been feeling well, because the horse is used to a routine, and any little differentiation in the routine, you can pick up, well, he's not feeling quite well today, what's the matter, and and so, but it's a skill, it's, I don't want to say job training, but that's what we're trying to do for the veterans.
Kind of a trade school.
Right.
I think also what's important to note about this is that this goes a little bit further than just PTSD. Obviously, some of the issues that occur with these mental situations are domestic violence, so we hope to be able to reduce that. In addition to that, this is a different approach and a different option for, rather than having opioid addiction, which can occur as well, we hope to reduce that. So this has far-reaching things. The long-range objectives for this, we obviously, the short range is to help families. The long-range objective is that we are setting a template for the partnerships that we've made with the hospitals, the research that will be done and will be documented and will be qualified and quantified will hopefully give us the opportunity to have this type of therapy program included under the Veterans Healthcare Program. I have a senator who is on my advisory board, and he has already raised a bill for this so that there will be the opportunity to perhaps have that legislation occurred.
At the state level?
Yes, at the state level. And then with this template of how to set up, how to partner, how to set up a proper advisory board, how to establish credibility. We're on Charity Navigator. We're listed there. We're listed on GuideStar. And when you have this credibility, then hopefully what we will have is a franchise, if you will. So there will be a Foxfield Farm West or South or Midwest. And if a veteran moves from one state to another state, they will be able to find something that is a program that is the same as something that they have been used to, which I think is very important.
The other thing that, it sounds like makes this program a little bit more unique is once they're in and they enjoy some success and achievement and kind of symbiosis with the whole thing, the end game is graduation and moving out. They're not, this is not something where they can either kind of latch on and attach themselves to as a refuge, if you will, where, you know, they kind of, I would imagine you would never shut the door on anyone, but there is a intended outflow of of your of the people who come here.
Yes, there's a, there's an extension, and as I said, if they wanted to continue their equestrian experience, they could do that. The Horse Guard doesn't mean they actually have to ride. They could go over there and help or volunteer. You understand that. There always is a purpose here. And I think what's critical to the program is everything is a learning curve. The learning curve for them is that there is a natural way to heal themselves. And the two other objectives, which are more immediate than the long term, is that we want, and that's what's so important about your program, and we're so appreciative of you coming out, is that we want the public, much like breast cancer used to be a no-no to talk about, an embarrassment, or a hidden thing that we can't, you didn't want to let the public know. People now accept it, support it, appreciate it.
Run
marathons for. So we want this to be a subject that people are not afraid of or embarrassed, and we want the veterans to be able to be vocal about their issues so that they feel comfortable in recognizing the problem and being able to admit that it's there, but there is a way to do it in a natural, holistic, if you will.
And you have setting. You have no clinical background. You worked in
corporate life gave me a bit of a clinical background in reading people.
Yeah.
So
you have no medical training.
I don't have any medical training. Or... However, I have taught hundreds of people to ride, and in teaching people to ride, one has to be able to judge the horse, the person, the situation, whether it be a very young child, an elderly person, perhaps an adult who always wanted to ride but has a fear or had a bad... So in a way, you have your natural ability, your field experience, if you will, with people so that I can read to a certain extent, but you're correct. Now, that's why we have tied ourselves into St. Francis and Mount Sinai, so that we actually... They have all the records. Mm-hmm. The records remain private. We will not be... open to knowing specifically what they've done, but however, we will understand and be given these veterans under the circumstances of them saying this is an appropriate program. Now, we do breed dogs, AKC registered Yorkshire Terriers,
yes.
And they will be used for dog therapy if that seems to be a good option as well. And then eventually, I hope, since this is a very scenic piece of property, that if art is another one which they've explored, then that could be done here as well. This is a venue we hope will be a comfortable place.
And Bill tells me the dogs are already working off the farm.
That's correct. We take them to Meadowbrook, which is a rehabilitation facility primarily for senior citizens, and we take the Yorkies over there and visit with them. And again, that dog therapy is very therapeutic. As they like to tell us, it's much better than the bottle medicine they get every day.
Right. If you're hearing something that's inspiring to you, perhaps you'd like to support, volunteer, underwrite, or just get to know Foxfield Farm, FARM, for a recovery mission. Their website is foxfieldrecoverymission.org. You can reach them at 860-844-0121. Don't run for a pen. We've still got five more minutes with the Reagans here. We'll give you that number again toward the end of the program so you can prepare. If you're just joining us on the program, Foxfield Farm is a registered nonprofit to providing equine groundwork PTSD therapy curriculum for U.S. veterans in conjunction with our friends at St. Francis now. They will be a generator of data to help to support the initiative of equine therapy for PTSD and others. You are exclusive to veterans, or do you have PTSD?
Currently, that would be true, John. Yes, exclusive to veterans. We want to focus. When you focus on something, you can meet your objectives. You get too diversified too quickly.
Sure.
You can miss the mark.
Right.
So what I would like to say to folks is just because we are a 501c3, donations can be made online. If you go to our website that you've given, you can either do it through PayPal or you can send it to our P.O. Box address. That because we are a 501c3, that is a tax-deductible situation.
Yeah.
And we would certainly recognize people. Now, we have had major corporations who have donated to this program, which gives further credibility to it. Newman's Own has been very generous.
Yeah.
Wells Fargo Foundation, Just Give. There have been other family foundations. Webster Bank just donated. Kubota has donated. So we have, I believe, some high-profile people. Mm. We have some private donations, but we've been very fortunate so far. But one thing I would like to let the people know We do have a brochure, and people often want to know what those things, what the money is used for, and it is for the horse rescue, transportation, home replacement, feed, hay, bedding. For the veterans, there's equine cleaning, grooming equipment, shirts, gloves, hats, instruction, safety equipment, curriculum manuals, fundraising, PR events, of course, to let people know. We are sponsoring two polo venues here in the Farmington Valley. One is the Simsbury Polo Club, and the other is the Farmington Polo Club. So we are there, very public and there. We have a tent, and so that obviously, and we're also going to sponsor some other things that are in the area as well. It's also for administration, for overall management, to meet our stated mission. We have a capital campaign going on. It's also for the dog therapy, grooming, and vetting. And professional fees, which would be membership dues relative to occupational associations. So I want people to know that essentially 100% of the money that comes in here is being used for this program.
In the last couple of minutes that we have with you, I would be remiss if I didn't recognize you also as a fellow broadcaster. You have a television program that doesn't necessarily self-promote.
Well, I do appreciate that. Yes, it's Connecticut Valley Views. My husband and I have been doing that for the past 7 years. We've received two state grants for high-def audiovisual equipment, and in addition to that, we have received two national awards for our program.
Oh, wonderful. Congratulations.
So we do interview high-profile people, topics, subjects. It's very enjoyable to me because what I feel, much like you, you like to bring the truth to people, and my byline is proof to the people. And so we investigate things, and well, we hope that people see us. We're in over 42 towns in Connecticut.
So we're both for the people.
That's exactly correct. Yes. Well, we want to help. We want to help all the people that we can, and we do so appreciate the fact you've given us this opportunity.
Oh, yeah. And also would be remiss in not letting folks all over the state and Long Island and New York and our listeners in Massachusetts and Rhode Island or anywhere in the world on iTunes know how do individuals who may benefit from the program get into it.
We're talking about the equine program.
Yes,
veterans would need to be in contact with. They could call us for the contact information to 860-844-0121, and then we would put them in contact with the hospital in order that we can use that as a conduit, because we would not be able to take medical records and be able to review them. So we want that as a conduit so they can call us and we would put them in contact definitely with the hospitals in order to make sure that that is lined up and appropriate.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Fantastic visit. Wonderful to meet you, make your acquaintance, and be exposed to now be able to pass the word and pay it forward for the Reagans. Susan Petrocelli Reagan and Bill Reagan are here at Fox Field, FARM, for a recovery mission, a registered 501c3 nonprofit for anyone who may not know a veteran who could benefit from this program, but who may want to benefit the program themselves. They can call 860-844-0121 for more information or get all connected to them on web or social. Learn their mailing address if you'd like to send a check. It's foxfieldrecoverymission.org. And we appreciate you having us here. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Well, for the second time this year, U.S. Senator Chris Murphy has mounted what he's called the Walk Across Connecticut, a chance to go one-on-one with constituents across the highways and byways of our fair state. And let it not be said that Chris Murphy wouldn't walk 100 miles just to be on the award-winning For the People. We have him on the line as he is wrapping up his walk across Connecticut all the way to the west in Danbury. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been an awesome week, and great to finish up by chatting with you.
So this all started in Killingly a week ago today as we broadcast on Sunday. First, tell us a little bit about the kind of logistics and planning that goes into an activity like this. When you finished last year, did you say, well, you know, the end of August is a good time to do this? And, you know, how does this all come together?
Well, I mean, it's really pretty simple. I just think that my responsibility as a member of the Senate is to, you know, be in touch with the people that I serve in a way that doesn't just require them to call me. I've got to go out and see them, and there's nothing that keeps me in touch better than walking across the state. I get to talk to hundreds of people. You know, August is a time when we're not in legislative session, so it's a good time to commit, you know, what really needs to be 5 or 6 days to walk across the state. Most people expect to see me walking down the street with an entourage. It's not that complicated. It's just me. I'm just walking from one end of the state to the other. I do about 25 miles a day. Last year, some days I did 30. You know, we just try to plot a route that brings me through as diverse a set of communities as possible. This year it was Danielson, Willimantic, Portland, Middletown, Meriden, Waterbury, then out to Danbury. And it was just an amazing experience. I talked to some great people, and I got a better sense of what the state wants me to do when I get back to Washington for the fall.
Did you notice any changes between last year's walk and this year's walk? Maybe not necessarily in terms of the routing, but is there? We think of Connecticut as a very, very small state, but were you discovering a decidedly different group of concerns or attitudes on the eastern part of the state versus the center or the western part of the state?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, look, Eastern Connecticut is primarily heavy agriculture, and so you do have a lot of agriculture out there that dominates a lot of the conversations you have. But you know what? The consistency between last year and this year, and between the east and the west in the state, is a more important story than the differences. And it's really evergreen issues that dominate. You know, it's not the things you're seeing on the cable news that people are talking about. It's healthcare. It's quality of schools. It's taxes. It's wages. Mm-hmm. That's what people want to talk to me about. Here's the one difference from last year to this year. This year, healthcare was really a dominant narrative across the state. People were really freaked out about the Republican healthcare bill. I had people that stood on the side of the road waiting for me for hours to tell me their personal story and about how fearful they were that their healthcare would disappear if the Republican bill went into effect. And so that was a dominant issue this year that came up, you know, more than probably any other issue.
And I guess when we do go on the cable news television and we see the near tar and feathering of many U.S. representatives and senators when they're doing hometown hall meetings and things like that, it must have been really gratifying as you moved across Connecticut to also get walked up upon by people who are so gratified that you stuck to your guns, and you and your colleagues who helped ensure that if any changes to the Affordable Care Act are to happen, they're not going to happen on your watch at the great expense of the people of Connecticut.
Yeah, I mean, the other difference this year to that point from last year that I should mention is that the town halls were 3 times as big this year as last year, maybe in some places 5 to 10 times as big. I do town halls at the end of every day. It's kind of preposterous. I walk 25 miles and then I stand on my feet for another 2 hours for a town hall. But, you know, as you know, John, we had about 500 people in Newtown. We had hundreds of people at our Eastern Connecticut town halls, and we only advertised them a few days ahead of time. There's a lot of people that show up at those town halls and who come and meet me on the way who have been, you know, really supportive of, you know, the strong voice that I tried to have on this issue of healthcare. And I'll tell you, you know, this is, you know, something I will take away. Not a single person of the hundreds that I talked to came up to me and said, hey, I wanted you to vote for the Republican health care bill. And not everybody loves Obamacare. Mm. Not everybody loves the existing system, but nobody thought that that was the solution.
Okay. Well, in contrast to the sometimes massive crowds that turned out for these pop-up town hall meetings that you held at the end of each of your day's walks across Connecticut, I'm interested in hearing whether you said some people waited out for hours till you came by them. Were you also, especially in the more sparsely populated areas or more commercial areas, where you were walking, were you finding that you had long stretches where you were able to kind of think for yourself, or did you find that due to the publicity, which may have not been long in the advance but was certainly pretty potent upon arrival, at least from my perspective in the media, were you finding that you were pretty consistently engaged as you went?
I was, and it was different than last year in that respect as well. Last year, we were really piloting this walk across Connecticut, and I had people join me, but, for shorter stretches. I had a decent amount of time last year where I just, had time to sort of think to myself, put on a little music or, catch up on stories that I was sort of looking down and reading as I was walking. This year, I had company almost the whole way. People would stop and talk to me. People would park their car ahead of me, walk back, and walk with me. It was pretty constant in terms of people joining me, and a lot of it was because of social media. My social media following is big, and that's great. And people would watch and track me as I posted on Twitter and Snapchat where I was going to be, and then they'd find and join me. It was really great, and I had progressives and liberals join me, but then I also had conservatives mm-hmm. join me. I got to talk to everybody.
Great. Well, I was able to witness a moment at the Newtown pop-up town hall where one of the last people who waited almost an hour and a half to speak to you kind of helped enlighten you a little bit about concerns for folks who have taken to motorcycles and bicycles as their means of transportation or recreation. And you seemed genuinely appreciative that you had kind of heard a fresh new issue that hadn't been plaguing you either personally or professionally through your tenure as U.S. Senate. Did you encounter any other surprises or great teaching moments as you interacted with constituents that were kind of, I wouldn't say off the wall, but unique or a little less discussed or never discussed with you before?
I think that happens, almost every time I do a town hall or I do office hours. I get an issue that, maybe isn't a first impression issue for me, but one that I, very easily admit I need to do some more study on. That issue that came up in Newtown was a really interesting one, as we're moving towards driverless cars, as we're moving towards more automated technology on the roads, what happens to people who ride motorcycles and bicycles? How do they integrate into those new traffic patterns? Now, that's not something we probably need to worry about for another 10 to 20 years, but, I'll give some thought to that. At my second town hall, I think, of the walk, a bunch of people talked to me about the consolidation of media and the increasing conservative messaging that happens on broadcast news that come from these big parent organizations. And people wanted me to have some solutions about what could be done legislatively to deal with that. I didn't have them immediately. I know about the problem, but I hadn't really done a deep dive yet in terms of what Congress could do to try to provide solutions, try to make sure that there's objective media or at least disclosure of political bent when an ownership changes hands. And I'll go back and do some research on that. So that consistently happens when I'm out knocking doors, when I'm out doing town halls, and certainly when I'm walking across the state.
Great. Well, we're going to take a very quick break with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy upon the conclusion of his walk across Connecticut. Take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more about the things he heard about that are either frustrating or that he and his colleagues in Washington are going to be able to do something about. We'll be back with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. Are you brave enough to write a short story? If so, you could win up to $1,000 cash in the Brave Enough to Write Short Story Contest. Brave Enough to Fail is a nonprofit providing free motivational programs and scholarships to high schoolers. To enter, all you need to do is go to braveenoughtofail.org. All short stories must be 10,000 words or less, and donations for entry is $20. All proceeds above the prize money go to raising student achievement by inspiring kids to realize their dreams. Submission deadline is coming up. It's August 31st, and winners will be announced in mid-September. The contest is open to previously unpublished works only, so go to braveenoughtofail.org and submit your short story today. All right, thanks for sticking with us. U.S. Senator Chris Murphy is on the line with us, so kindly taking the phone as he concluded his walk across Connecticut on here on Thursday ahead of our Sunday broadcast. He spent since last Sunday, where this all kicked off in Killingly, moving all the way across the state to Danbury, where we talk to him now. So, Senator Murphy, do tell us a few of the things that you were hearing about from your constituents and folks who you were meeting along your walk across Connecticut that you are either currently working on or actually have the ability to make some forward progress on when you go back to Washington.
Well, you know, as we talked about earlier, the dominant theme was health care. And as much as people were upset at the Republican bill, that would have done great damage to people's health care and people's health in Connecticut, they also wanted us to work together. They wanted Republicans and Democrats to, you know, find some fixes to the existing health care system that could, you know, get Republican and Democratic support. And that's going to happen in September. The Republicans have announced that they're going to get a bipartisan process whereby Republicans and Democrats on the health committee can try to meet and come up with a resolution that will fix some of the lingering problems in our healthcare system. So I can't tell you if that's going to actually, produce a product that can pass, but at least that is going to occur. I talked to at least one business owner who really relies on federal contracts in order to put people to work, and they really were supportive of the work I've done on Buy American. I'm trying to convince the Trump administration to work with me. I've had a number of meetings with people at the White House trying to say, hey, listen, we're going to disagree on immigration and health care and other issues. Let's work together on promoting American manufacturing. And that might be a potential source of agreement between me and President Trump. So there are definitely some issues that we can make progress on. And my hope is that I'll have some deliverables to people that I talk to on the walk.
How about in terms of any fears that you might have had to assuage related to the tenuous situation in North Korea or Venezuela? Did anybody chat you up about either military or defense concerns?
You know, when I was walking, I didn't hear as much about foreign affairs. I really heard about kind of kitchen table issues from people. Mm-hmm. But at the town halls, these big issues about overseas involvement were definitely brought up by folks who attended. I wrote a piece that appeared in the Huffington Post and Harper's Current on North Korea that I hope people will take a look at. And, you know, my case is pretty simple. You know, Trump is not wrong to make it clear to the North Koreans that there is going to be repercussions if they were ever to carry out a strike on the United States or our allies. He's doing it in, you know, language that is laughable, that's frankly not stoking many fears in North Korea because it seems so over the top. The problem is he doesn't have the other part of the strategy. He has no diplomatic path, no capacity to get to a diplomatic path to to unwind this crisis. He's got no personnel at the State Department with expertise at the highest levels on Asia. He's got nobody in the White House who knows how to do a complicated deal with China to get them to push the North Koreans to stand down. So tough talk just is pointless without a diplomatic political strategy side by side. And, you know, that's what I said when I was asked about it this week.
Very good. In terms of sharing, legitimately sharing frustration with any of the constituents you met on your walk across Connecticut, Senator Murphy, are there grave concerns on the part of your constituents that either due to the lack of political will or hard votes that at this point you really can't do much about except continue to try?
Well, I mean, I think everybody recognizes that, you know, legislative progress is going to be difficult in Washington with President Trump in the White House, and he has no ability to, you know, lead even his own party to water. And so, you know, we're going to try to get a health care bill done. We're going to do our best to pass a budget and avoid a government shutdown. But, you know, this is not a terribly functional government right now with the Republicans in charge of the House and the Senate and this president in the White House. Now, it doesn't mean that it's a, you know, necessarily a fun place to show up to work these days, but it feels like an important place to show up to work because of the stakes to Connecticut if some of these really hurtful pieces of legislation like the immigration ban, like the health care bill, go through.
Very good. Well, as a state resident and a constituent who didn't get a chance to stand in line, but who gets to talk with you on the radio once in a while, if I was to stand in line, I would want to ask you the same question that I actually asked your colleague, Congresswoman Elizabeth Esty, who I had the privilege of speaking with earlier in the week while you were walking across Connecticut. And that is, you know, we hear so much about the president, so much about the comings and goings of the people in the White House, but I don't get a real sense of the vice president, Mike Pence. I don't know if you've had a chance to meet him, but in the last minute or so that we have to try to keep your answer short, what would you tell your constituents and the folks across Connecticut about your sense of the vice president?
I think he's, you know, completely folded into the president's agenda. He's up at the Capitol every week trying to push forward the funding for the wall to deliver this disastrous Republican health care bill, the votes it needs. So I don't know Mike Pence well, but I've had strong words. I think he's got a terribly loose association with the truth. I think he has occasionally deliberately lied about the health care bill. And he is, you know, right now the chief emissary for the president up at the Capitol trying to push through pieces of legislation that don't enjoy anywhere near majority support in the country.
Very good. Well, in closing, your last words to the people of Connecticut that maybe you didn't have a chance to see. I imagine you'd want to invite them to get in touch with you if they didn't get to meet you on your walk across Connecticut. What's the best way for folks to express their concerns to you now that you're off the road for a few days?
Well, you know, I'll be back in Connecticut, you know, all throughout the summer and fall. Every time we're not voting in D.C., I'm back here in Connecticut as a Senator Blumenthal, and hope people will come out and see me when I'm back. Obviously, they can write or email. They can follow me on social media. I'm probably the most active senator, one of the most active senators on social media. Chris Murphy CT is my handle on most of those mediums, and there's just a variety of ways that people can let me know what I should be doing. That was the whole point of this walk, to have people tell me what they want me to be advocating for in Washington, and that project continues.
Excellent. U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, upon the conclusion of his walk across Connecticut for 2017, Chris, we'll see you out on the road and hopefully back around the state again for another walk in 2018. Thanks so much for calling in. Well, even the most horrific situations could yield some light
at the end of the experience. And such is the case for a grassroots organization that I have recently come to know, thanks to their founder, Judy Murray, who's on the line with us. The organization that she has founded is called DAN, the Dignity and Advocacy Network, whose mission is supporting communities through education and training on positive, non-medical approaches to mental health care. Sadly, following the suicide of her son, Dan, Judy, the organization's founder, has become a passionate advocate for mental health reform and speaks internationally on the value of social and psychological approaches for serious mental health conditions. Go to the backstory. And as I said, I'm sorry to have to put you through it, but it is the catalyst for the good that you have done so far and are going to continue to do. When did you begin suspecting that your son was having some concerns?
He had a history with the mental health system from when he was young. He was very different. He kind of marched to his own drummer, and he was targeted with ADHD, bipolar, and then schizoaffective disorder when he was around 20. And I kind of was a victim to the system and put my faith and trust in them I put my son's life in their hands. So he had issues of sadness, depression, happy, manic. There's many, many names we can call it.
Mm-hmm.
So we, moved through life accordingly, and there were good times, there were difficult times. But it was when he was around 20 that he began hearing voices, and he was hearing really negative voices to kill himself and so on. And I tried to get him help, but he insisted that he wasn't ill and would not request it himself. And then he was eventually taken to the hospital against his will. His rights were taken away. And regretfully, I was a part of that action. And he was discharged 10 days later in worse condition than when he was admitted. Mm. And told me 2 hours after he was home from the hospital of his plan. Of course, I panicked, realizing that there was really nowhere else to turn. I had gone to everyone I could reach out to, and I realized it was up to us and his family and loved ones to try to keep him here with us. And 2 weeks later, he lost the battle. We all lost the battle.
Mm. So many of the points in your brief story resonate not only with me, but with so many of the other guests that we've had on this program. This frustration with the system that some say is so overburdened that it's working at capacity, and a lot of professionals privately admit that they know that they're not doing the job that they need to do. Also, this putting one's trust in that system and to a regrettable end, as was your case, is too often heard. Following the immediate loss of Dan and your grieving, how did you turn the page to the decision to launch the Dignity and Advocacy Network?
Well, honestly, John, I don't want to get into this a lot, but I am spiritual, and I feel like I was just being pulled towards this whole movement for change. I saw it didn't work. It was very obvious it didn't work, and I just did my research and endless research, and connections just came out of the woodwork with people who in recovery from the most severe extreme cases of altered states, and I began speaking about it, and I learned a lot, and I learned there are other options out there that actually work. I have personally connected with several individuals who were in extreme states and in and out of the hospital and on and off meds, and they're in complete recovery now.
Well, certainly,
going to support groups and so on.
Well, I was going to say, certainly many tried and true and globally successful intervention and recovery systems have a faith-based component, the giving oneself over and bowing humbly to a higher power in recovery is sort of a universal theme across many faiths and many systems. Certainly, you have found a lot of comfort and resolution through your faith, and that's very much appreciated. Tell me about the nuts and bolts process of launching the network have you qualified yet as a 501c3 nonprofit, or are you in that process?
So right out of the gate, pretty much, yeah.
So that you
had... So we are a nonprofit, and I facilitate support groups for the Hearing Voice Network, which is a international movement, mm-hmm. or network of support groups for people who hear voices and experience other unusual perceptions, visions, whatever it may be.
They're around the world.
They
were actually a guest on our program just a few months ago.
It
is a phenomena that is legitimate. Phenomena that is experienced by tens of thousands of people and is recognized as a legitimate concern, especially when those voices do act in a way as to compel or inspire an individual to harm themselves. It's something I certainly have had personal relations with individuals who have experienced that phenomena. So I get it. Let's talk about all of the things that you do. You travel internationally to speak. How far and how recently had you been called upon to share your story and your mission?
I will be actually in a couple weeks going to England to speak at an international conference there. And the Hearing Voice Congress is in Boston this year. That's international. They're in a different country every year, and we're lucky enough to have them here now, and I'll be speaking there. I want to say that, can I give you an example?
Sure,
of someone,
do.
Of course, without a name, who mm-hmm. really went through a profound healing in the last year, just so that listeners can get an idea of what really is going on.
Absolutely.
He was in extreme states. He was suicidal, homicidal, in and out of the hospital, on and off meds. And he did come to a couple groups. He came here. We talked for hours on end. It was very difficult to communicate with him, to say the least. He ended up, he was in an environment that was very distracting to him, as the psych unit is the worst place for someone to be when they're in a state of depression, anxiety, or an altered state. The psychic stimulation is just too much for them in that condition. So he ended up going away, actually out of the country, to a quiet place where he was able to kind of stay by himself, took everything that we talked about, and with the peacefulness around him, was actually able to turn inward, relive his past and all the trauma in his life over and over and over again. He's amazing because he did this on his own, and a lot of people need, intense therapy, such as psychoanalysis, to go through this process. It could be very painful. Mm. He did it on his own. And he was able to forgive everything that he went through, everyone and everything. He still hears voices today, 9 months later, actually, and he has a good voice now that actually balances things out in his mind. If he gets angry at something, you know, that good part of him, positive part of him steps in and he's able to calm right down. And that's what it's about. It's about addressing the psychosocial and spiritual parts of an individual, not just medicating them, which suppresses the source of where these experiences come from, because the source is more often than not from a traumatic event in your life that could go back years to when you were a child. And when once you, you know, kind of back up from that, because it's so painful at the time, we tuck it away in a deep place in our minds because it's too difficult to face at the time. And it remains there, this emotional pain, unprocessed, and it wreaks havoc on your mind, body, and soul. And once that is pulled back up to the surface, to the conscious mind, and processed, relived, and finally processed, then the person is able to release it, let go, and it's a profound healing. They actually come to a full recovery and actually a personality transformation for them.
And are his harmful tendencies either mitigated or outpaced by his ability to now identify with positive voices and elements both within himself and in his life?
Exactly. And you know, it's not the voices that are dangerous. It's how one reacts and responds to the voices. Many people hear voices, and many times you don't hear about it. You know, they're not in the system. There's actually a study being done now with psychics and mediums versus those that are in the system and diagnosed with schizophrenia, psychosis, and trying to correlate, you know, why are some of them struggling so much and some of them are using it as a gift.
Not to correlate the two in any physiological or medical way, but for people who either have not ever had an acquaintance or a loved one experiencing it, they tend to react to the concept of an individual hearing voices negatively and stigmatize that, much like individuals who may somehow have never been touched or whose lives have never been touched by having a loved one or an acquaintance involved with something like an opiate addiction. I so often hear, you know, why don't they just quit? Why don't they just cold turkey? Why don't they just get help? And you know as well as I do that it takes a lot more than that. And it's so gratifying to be able to meet someone who, as I said earlier, has taken such a deep and personal tragedy as you losing your son and turned it into this dignity and advocacy network. Folks, if you're interested in learning more about Judy and her story, I would encourage you to visit their website, which is Dignity and Advocacy Network. And there's also a way to get to know the folks in the network and their mission in a very cool and special way. On September 13th, in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Judy, let me allow you to invite all the folks that are listening this morning to come out, hang out with Darren Kramer, from our friend from WTNH, and tell us all about Spirits for Dan.
Yes, gladly. That is going to be at Anthony's Ocean View in New Haven, and it is a wine, beer, and martini tasting for anyone who would like to try them. Lots of food. Darren Kramer will be our MC. We have tons of great auction items for a silent auction and raffles. Mia St. John, who is a 5-time world champion boxer and an amazing mental health advocate, also losing her son to suicide, will be in from L.A. And we're hoping for John Quinones from 2020 and the show What Would You Do, who's an excellent speaker, and he is trying his hardest to be here. So we're hopeful that he will be there. And we'd love to have everybody come.
Excellent.
The tickets are $50. We need a count, so it's best to go on the website or go to Eventbrite and Spirits for Dan and purchase the tickets online, not at the door.
Great. And as we play this program, we're about a month ahead of that. It's coming up on September 13th, again, at Anthony's Ocean View. If you'd like to purchase tickets or reach out to ask any further questions of Judy that might not be able to be answered through her website or through conversation that we had on this program, you can email Judy@DignityAndAdvocacyNetwork. That's all full words, including the A-N-D for Ann. Judy@DignityAndAdvocacyNetwork.org, I should say. Judy, thank you for reaching out to us to help to reinforce some of the messages that we previously heard on the program in a little bit of a shorter interview with the Hearing Voices Network representative. Congratulations on the great work that you're doing and the representation you are providing to your late son, Dan, our condolences for this horrific loss to you. Dan's mission, the Dignity and Advocacy Network, is supporting communities through education and training on positive non-medical approaches to mental health care. Judy Murray, our guest this morning, was the founder of Dan. We hope you'll turn out to support the organization on September 13th, or consider getting in touch if you think Judy and the network may have some assistance, information, or support they can offer to you or a loved one. Judy, great to make your acquaintance, and I'm sure we'll be speaking again. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.